This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
New CBS Monday. NCIS is back.
We need all hands on deck.
So grab your gear.
NCIS!
And join our elite team.
What are the charges?
Murder.
New cases to be solved.
Double tap to the chest.
Same caliber as the murder weapon.
And new criminals to catch.
That's the bomb maker. Where's the bomb?
A new NCIS, Monday, 9, 8 Central, on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
Welcome, everyone, back to the Brocast. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network, and I am joined by Tracy Pearson, scratching his stubble. Tracy, how are you?
This is a beard, Dave. You're not the only one who can grow a beard.
Yeah, but it had a stubbly sound.
Okay, scratch yours. Okay, now scratch mine. Stop. Sounds the same. You have bigger stubble.
I don't believe that. Please sound off in the message board if mine sounded different from Tracy's.
Well, we're doing at different parts of our. Well, I guess
We're both going cheek.
Okay. See, I'm really. Aren't you more dense right around your chin?
My densest area is probably right here.
Yeah, I think that's with everyone. Me too.
Yeah, okay. it's the jawline ridge.
There must be some. Reason through evolution on why that's hairier.
Yeah, can we get a hair scientist on the message board? I'm sure we have a hair scientist
or a beard. Yeah. Specifically, I want a beard scientist.
Yeah, a follicleist. Whatever. We want to know.
We got talking about hair. We've got a let's. Segue into the
Mick Cronin
talking about the basketball program because they have very little hair on that coaching staff.
Well done. We got a lot to talk about. UCLA is aggressively in the transfer portal. First, I want to mention up top, you crazy kids out there, you have I think if like one or two more things have come in, you've approached $90,000 in for Men of Westwood basketball NIL, which is crazy, in my opinion. Absolute lunacy. That's a whale. That's his orca sound.
That wasn't bad.
It was not bad. It was either somebody being strangled to death or an orca.
I didn't even rehearse that. That could have been really bad. It was marginally okay.
That was pretty good. So yeah, 90 grand already, and quite a bit of time left today.
And let's talk
100.
Let's talk a little bit about this. So you get a new football coach, there's some excitement. Deshaun Foster's generating, some buzz. And we did this match thing and it did pretty well. Mick Cronin has a losing season. We do the match thing, and it's doing pretty well.
It's doing better.
It's doing better. So that guy, there's a lot to talk about there. Someone's asking me on the forum, and I've talked to a few people who have given money. It's really weird how people psychologically you would give to a program that's really doing well. But in a lot of ways, psychologically, people think, oh, they're doing fine. Right now, the UCLA program is a good basketball program, but it fell on tough times. So it needs help to get back, so people are more willing to help that way.
Yeah.
I guess maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So speaking of that, first you guys are all, I mean, you're crazy. We love you. You're crazy.
Yeah. Kid. Amazing stuff.
Yeah. Pretty amazing.
Collective a whale.
Yeah. But the reason that's so important and obviously such a big deal that you all are doing that is there's a lot of roster things that still need to get figured out for next year. We're going to talk about a few different things today. We're going to lead off with a Dembona, timing of his decision, kind of the latest and greatest on, you know, how long they're going to wait for Bona to make his decision. We're going to talk about transfer portal targets, who UCLA might go after, what positions, you know, as we get deeper and deeper into this thing and start to get a lay of the land as to when guys might be entering, the slow trickle of guys as, you know, teams get bumped off in the tournament, who they might be targeting. And then finally, what we're hearing about the current roster and whether, you know, certain guys could leave, certain guys could stay, yada, yada, yada. But as we've learned throughout the last couple of years, huge part of roster retention, huge part of roster acquisition, all about those NIL dollars. So what you are doing right now is actually going to impact the things we're talking about next. So keep that always in mind. You are actually playing a role in this. So
absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we've been told it's a whale role is what Bro is doing. So that's pretty cool. Adem Bona. Yeah, I've heard from a few different sources that are kind of close to the situation. You know, Adem's basically a really good kid. He really is. I mean, you can see it on the court how hard he plays and everything, but he's a good human being. He, from what I've heard, does not want to do wrong by Mick Cronin and really essentially do wrong by himself by making a bad decision. Right. But, and I've been saying this for so long, and it's hard for fans to get it. But if these kids who are 18, 19, 20 years old, and they've been living in this world surrounded by an entourage and now surrounded by agents, and the mentality they've had since they were 15, 16, 17 as a five-star recruit, that they're one and done. That's what they believe. They can't get it out of their head. And I'm sure Adem Bona just feels he was delayed by his shoulder injury last year, that he would have been a one and done last year. And, you know, maybe UCLA with him and Jalen Clark, they go to the final, they win a national championship, and maybe he is first round. Who knows? But the mentality is always, is this is college with five stars. College is just a stopover, and they should be one and done. And anything else that impacts that is just some adversity. So you got to understand, he's had it in his mind. That he would be one and done. Now, Adem Bona is a pretty good student. He's a pretty smart kid too. So school really isn't that much of a factor. The biggest factor, remember when we used to talk about this for years and years, and how many guys put their names in the draft from UCLA? I mean, you can list them all. And
desperate to leave.
We would say bad decision. It's a bad business decision on your own. As recently as Amari Bailey. Mm-hmm. Amari Bailey's hoping for a second contract that would get him. I mean, right now he's hanging on by his teeth, right? Yeah. With a two-way. He's hoping for a second contract that might get him like $4 million. Yep. As opposed to you play yourself into the first round. And it's not that you can, God, there's so many aspects of this. It's very hard to go to the NBA combine and play yourself into the first round. For one thing, first rounders aren't going to the combine. Right. So you're not playing against them. How many people were projected mid second round and played themselves in the first round of that combine? If it's happened, it's very, very, very rare. So how you get yourself into the first round is to do what Jaime Hawkins did. You come back, you have a fantastic season. You show that you've improved in so many ways. That's how you do it. And that's how you go from a second contract that luckily, if you were really good, you second contract of like $4 million compared to a second contract, which is $40 million. So this is where it all happens. So business wise, it's always been that decision, but now with NIL, just think about it from this standpoint, theoretically. Let's say UCLA could give Adem Bona at least as much as what a two-way contract is, and maybe a little more. Let's just say there are ways for him to keep more of that money. as opposed to if he goes into the NBA draft, he has to pay off agents. He's got to pay taxes. It's just, he would be able to keep more money in NIL and make more money. You, let's just say straight up, you'd make more money in NIL next year than you would on a two-way contract in the NBA.
And just to let people know, so a two-way contract last cycle, so it'll be more in 2024, 2025, but ballpark was about $560,000 for a two-way.
Right. And just put it this way, without talking literal numbers of NIL, theoretically, he would make more money at UCLA next year. So take out all the other decisions that it used to be for all those guys that made bad decisions. Now this is a no-brainer. Like I wrote this morning on the forum, this is ridiculously a bad decision. You are giving up more money if staying in college. The true path towards making a lot of money in the NBA is coming back and playing yourself into the first round. And you're risking that because you think you will go have some workouts with some franchises and they'll be so amazed by you that you'll play and go to the combine and you'll play yourself into the first round, which just so doesn't happen. So that's where that stands. I know, I'm pretty certain that UCLA is not going to sit around and wait. They just can't. They need to find a replacement center in the transfer portal. I'd say a couple of weeks. I'd say by that first week of April, that's about as far as it can go. Then they'll give them, right now UCLA is contacting, like Maxime Renault, it's contacting various centers and saying, we love you. We'd love for you to come. But we're not just going to recruit you. If a Dembona's here, because we're not going to do that to you, but you know, you have time to make a decision. We're throwing our hat in the ring a bit. If he decides to go in the next 2 weeks, we love you and we'd love to feature our team around you. So that's where they are with a Dembona.
And so, yeah, I mean, a huge factor here is going to be keeping guys warm. And we'll talk about that in the next section too, of just kind of the slow trickle of transfers who are going to come into the portal over the next couple of weeks. But with Bona, I mean, here's the deal for me. Bona and Dylan Andrews are the most important. Like, just throw everyone, because it's free agency right now, throw everyone into the bucket of your roster acquisition. The two most important acquisitions are Dylan Andrews and Adem Bona for next year's team. Like, and that's, throw everything else out. You can anchor a very, very good to elite team around those two guys. Next year's team, if it's going to be very, very good, more or less requires, I'm going to say at least one in case Adem Bona leaves, but really in my heart of hearts, it's both of them. Next year's team to be very, very good to elite needs both of those guys back. So I think it's a huge factor going forward for UCLA to make those compelling pitches and somehow, convince the best angels on each of their shoulders that it's time to stay. So that's a Dembona. We want to get into roster acquisition stuff, and that's who they're targeting. Tracy just mentioned Maxime Reynaud, the Stanford center from this past year. There's a lot of other names throughout. Some, I think, are still in the process of maybe possibly entering the portal, but there's speculation that they might enter the portal. First, I kind of want to start with a general overview. This isn't like football, where it seemed like everyone went in at roughly the same time. Obviously, there's a couple of different time periods where guys go in, but everyone kind of went in after the regular season before bowl games, and they opted out of their bowl games. That didn't happen. There's a lot of guys who might go in who are on NCAA tournament teams right now. So it could be this coming Monday, another big influx, and then the following Monday, another big influx. So how do you, just from like a strategic standpoint, how do you approach that?
Yeah, it's tough. It's unique in the course of college sports, how you manage this. You do a lot of deep evaluation on these guys. Who are guys who are just flat out takes no matter what?
Yep.
Who are guys you might wait on to see who else could go in the portal? Who are guys, like, if you strike out on those two levels, takes at that point? And then who would be left by then, and who you keep warm? It's a lot of recruiting. So it's a lot to manage, and you know, the staff is doing that right now. There are so many guys going in the portal, and they need to evaluate each one. So they're getting game film on each one. They're using a lot of analytics that they have access to and analyzing players from the standpoint of not only how good the player is, how he would fit in terms of what UCLA needs, how he would fit off the court in Cronin's program, just academics. There are so many things to evaluate and vet. And I mean, it's a very involved process, I would say. If we're going to break down on what they're ideally looking for, I mean, they're right now, we're a few days into the transfer portal, so they're shooting high, as they should. I mean, they want a starter level power forward, a starter level wing. If you just right now, if they with the personnel that they have, if they returned everyone, let's say, and added a starter level power forward,
that alone is making them a Pac-12 contender. Well, not a Pac-12 contender.
Well, let's say they had added it last year.
It would have made them a contender in the league this year.
Yeah. So that's I think that's the highest priority. A starter level wing. And these are guys that they'll be looking for. You know, it's been talked about on the NCAA tournament telecast yesterday. Playing young freshmen, even regardless of how talented they are, against a team full of veterans now, it just, they can't compete. So UCLA is going out to look for veteran guys who know what it takes to win at a very high level. And that would be a power forward, and you'd want a starter level wing also. I think ideally they'd like to have a combo guard to take the point guard load off of Dylan Andrews. Maybe another shooter off the bench, a guard, wing, someone. So that's four. I don't know if they'll get four. They could get one, they could get three. But I think that's kind of the guys they're searching for. And of course, if Bona decides he's going into the draft and staying, add a post player to that. So that's where they are. How do they find those?
Yeah. Just with the 3-4, the more I think about it, one or both of those guys really needs to be an athlete, like really a plus athlete. Ideally it would be the wing if you had to pick one. But getting one of those two guys to be a plus athlete, I mean, I would even sacrifice, I mean, I know this is just me talking, but I would even sacrifice some offensive skill, because if you're talking about like a defensive issue they had this year, it was that, like, lacking the versatility to do all that switching stuff that Mick likes to do. Getting somebody who's got some real plus athleticism at one of those two spots is critical for me when I'm thinking about the complexion of next year's team and its potential upside.
I think so too. I mean, everyone has been emphasizing shooters, and I get that. That is a key component for UCLA next year. But improving team athleticism,
yeah,
is just as key. And getting a wing who can switch on to just about anyone and be a great and defend, you know, anyone from 6'3 to 6'7. That gives you, Jalen Clark gave you so much versatility, and yeah, to have a person like that, that's why I'm saying if they get a starter level wing, I could see them going out and really finding a really great shooting guard. You know, let's say that starter level athletic wing shoots 33% from three. I could see them going out and finding a guard who shoots 40% from three.
Yeah, because then you've got three. If you get Andrews and Bona back, if you get that wing who's a starting level athlete, and you get the point guard who's obviously a great defender athlete, and you've got the center who's a great defender athlete, you can hide whoever your 4 and 2 are, as long as you've got that long wing who's, you know, got the 6'6", 6'7", has the ability to play up on defense and the ability to play down.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's where I was going next. You have Dylan Andrews, who's a great defender.
Yeah.
Adem Bona was the defensive player of the year in the Pac-12. Plug in a great defensive wing. Now, let's just say his name since we've already brought it up. Because he's not in the portal yet, so, you know, I don't want to, you know, jinx this or anything, but there has been some rumors that Kobe Johnson from USC would put his name in the draft. He's a very good defender.
Yes.
Someone like that, who's a great defender. Now, Kobe Johnson, I mean, he's no slouch as a scorer himself, and
he's fine.
He's fine, and you have to understand. You need to project at least decent improvement from year to year.
Like, and also from uncoached to coached.
That's true also. but you can not even necessarily that. Let's take who's a guy who statistically
Jules Bernard every single
year. No, how about Keyshawn Johnson from Arizona? He transferred. No, I'm just throwing this out, but I'm going to rely on the fact that I know what I'm talking about, hopefully. he transferred from San Diego State.
Uh-huh.
And let's get his God. Whenever you search for Keyshawn,
everything improved. I'll tell you, everything improved. His
points, it
improved,
comes up Keyshawn Johnson, and I don't want Keyshawn Johnson.
His shooting improved, his rebounding improved, his scoring improved, everything improved for
right
him.
From where he was. Okay, last year at San Diego State, 7.7 points a game, shot 26% from three. This year, 11.6 points per game, because they got a lot of scorers on that team, and just about 40% from three. So yeah. I would project someone like, let's say, Kobe Johnson will, you'll see some improvement. So just take that into consideration.
And legitimately a great defender. And this is probably the most important factor for me, Tracy. His price will be a little bit less than it would have been coming out of last year because he didn't have a great year on that completely dysfunctional team.
Yeah.
Like, he'll be, I think, a little bit easier to get if he goes in.
Yeah. He was kind of, I mean, he was obviously one of their best players, but he was up and down a bit.
I don't blame him. That team was absolutely dysfunctional.
Yeah, so 11 points a game. He went up from 9 to 11, but he only shot 31% from three when the previous season he shot 36. He took more shots, but still.
Rebounded less. Like
his free throw shooting went down. So, yeah. You could probably see a marked improvement if he went to a winning team that, you know, had all
coaches,
of its
coaches.
Yeah, and coaches. Yeah. Yeah. But you're right. You get those three guys or a Kobe Johnson type who can really defend on the wing. That's really a core kind of a championship team. Experienced guys and know how to play defense. And then you can plug in a bunch of shooters. Lazar Stefanovic shot 39% from three. Dylan Andrews will shoot 38% from three next year. I'm going to mark my words. I think he ended up shooting 33 or something this year.
Yeah. Once he figured out what he was doing, he was shooting the lights out.
Yeah. So they will shoot well. Then you add a shooter to that. A guard or another off guard or a smaller wing, let's say. You know what would be really interesting, and I gotta look at more USC film. If we're talking about Kobe Johnson, probably getting in too deep since he's not in the portal yet, but how is he defending smaller, like 6'4" shooting guards?
He's good. I mean, yeah. And this is again, just based on my anecdotal recollection, but he can guard down. The only thing I would worry about with Kobe is actually guarding up, like in situations. Cause like, again, if I'm on my like absolute ideal wish list, the guy you get as the wing athlete can play some small four at times. Like that's what I would want. And I'm not sure Kobe's that guy. you know, I think he's a true athlete wing.
But so, I think Lazar Stefanovic is.
Yeah, Lazar, that's the thing, is you can stick him as a small four in certain lineups, and you don't lose rebounding. We've seen that. You lose athleticism is the only problem with that. Yeah. But you can, again, as we just said, you can make that work. You can make all that work.
Baseball has begun, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today in 5, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Sampl, every Monday through Saturday as we deliver all of your fantasy baseball needs in just 5 minutes. We'll break down the biggest performers, news, and prospects who could make an impact this season. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found. The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
So let's go back to the first, probably the highest priority target here is a power forward.
Yep.
That's what they were really missing. They are recruiting Michael Ajayi from Pepperdine. I like him. I think he'd be, especially if you get that athletic defender at the three, then you can plug him in to the four, Ajayi. Yep.
To rebound and to play tough on offense.
Rebound, play tough. And actually, in watching, he's fine guarding college fours. He was a little not as good trying to stay in front of the ball on quicker threes. But he can still do that because of his length. So I really like him. I think he'd add a real scoring punch. That guy needs to shoot more from three. For one thing, yeah. He's got a great stroke. He didn't shoot enough from three, and he shot like 40% or something. Then we've talked about some guys who aren't in the portal yet that, I mean, out there in this industry among college coaches and everyone talking, it's felt that Tyler Bilodeau, the sophomore power forward from Oregon State, would go in, and there's been some talk about Brandon Angel from that he'd be a fifth year coming from Stanford. What do you think of those guys? And what do you think about them compared to Michael Ajayi?
Yeah, I mean, it's so interesting. I could really go in so many different directions with it. Like, I like Bilodeau. I think he's a really good scorer. I think he impacts. Like, if you watch that Pac-12 tournament game, his inability to play in that first half because he had two fouls significantly impacted the game for Oregon State. Like, some of it is just watching a team, and they had so much of their offense geared around playing around through Bilodeau. And that's something that you can only tell through watching, because his stats don't jump out to you, but he's an impressive player. But then you've got Brandon Angel, who can really hit it from deep. He's got a lot of experience. He's kind of grown as a player each year. You can kind of project him. The only thing I worry with Stanford is, like, I hate to talk ill of Jared Haas because he's a really nice guy, but he doesn't coach guys up to be super tough a lot of times. And I would worry about that with Angel, and not like he can be a good player, but I'm not sure about his fit for Mick, honestly, in the end of the day. And then Ajayi, I mean, the rebounding numbers are what stand out to me there. Like, yes, he can score. Yes, he can shoot. But the fact that he's not a plus athlete and is still, you know, getting 10 rebounds a game, I don't know. Like, the more I think about it, I think that might be my guy, and it's just projecting him from the lower level to the higher level. But rebounding numbers, it's just that stands out, because when a guy who's not a plus athlete who can rebound at that level, that means they've got a pretty good understanding of the game, understanding of where to be, understanding of how to position himself, and playing leverage, doing all the like kind of nitty gritty things that make a good rebounder. And if I was eyeballing an issue with the defense this year, it was defensive rebounding. So that might be my pick.
So I kind of agree. I think what UCLA would do if Bilodeau and Angel go in the transfer portal, they recruit all three of them really hard, and it's the first to commit.
Yeah,
I think you take any one of the three. So we're
yeah. I mean,
we're talking about a luxury.
Yeah, I think it's 6-1, half a dozen. I think if I was like doing a race, they would be a photo finish, but I would pick Ajayi.
Yeah, really interesting comparing them though, and that's what we're doing. It's kind of fun, but I think they'd take any one of the three of them. Ajayi is smaller. I mean, Bilodeau's 6'9". Angel is probably legit 6'8". He's probably the better all around scorer though.
Yeah.
Who would be able to a better defender against a four or a three? That's kind of a wash. Bilodeau is a decent defender. Angel is an okay. He's not a great athlete, Brandon Angel. Yeah. I mean, they're all kind of in the same boat when it comes to athleticism. What stands out to me is Ajayi might be at least an inch or two smaller than those guys, and he's a better rebounder.
Yeah.
Which says a lot, just not about long arms, big hands, but effort too. And tougher
and understanding. Like rebounding is so much about angles and leverage and, you know, knowing how to box out where you're not just boxing out, but you're actually like kind of sitting on their hips so they can't jump over you. Like, just there's so much of it that goes into it.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think any one of the three, and maybe there will be more that open up, you know, power forwards.
This is what I want to get into, because so only one of these guys is currently in the portal, but we're anticipating, because both Angel and Bilodeau are not in the NCAA tournament, those could pop any time if they're going in. Do you, if you're Mick Cronin, take one of those three if they're in it? Say they're all in it by Monday. Do you take one of those three, or is this good enough? Do you keep them warm and try to see if you can gamble on another guy or two coming in? Like, what's kind of your approach here if you're Mick Cronin?
I think you take Ajayi and Bilodeau and maybe Angel.
First to jump in?
First to jump. And then, because no matter who else goes in, you've got a bird in the hand of someone you've recognized will be a key component next year against anyone who's better than these guys. It's going to be a tough recruitment.
And no matter which one of these three guys, I think we can say definitively a huge upgrade over what UCLA would be going into next year with.
Yes. Yes.
So yeah.
Yeah. But all about timing. Really interesting.
Yes.
And then I could see them going after some kind of another guard. I listed Corin Johnson, the player from Washington. If you've watched him, that dude's good, man. You know, he had an injury in the middle of the season. Then he came back. He had like a 30-point game. He can score. He's scoring Johnson. that would be a great addition to the guard rotation. They might be shooting even higher than that at this point. They might as well. They're a few days into the transfer portal. But there might be someone that they could also add, like a Clark Slager, the kid from Penn, who would be a guy who would knowingly come to UCLA, that he is coming off the bench and he is a key component coming off the bench to trying to win a national championship. And he's a great shooter, has a great basketball sense, basketball IQ, just isn't a great athlete and not very tall at 6 foot, 6'1", but scored 18 points a game in the Ivy League.
I really wish he was 2 inches taller.
Yeah, but you know what? If you're 2 inches taller, you wouldn't get him.
Yeah.
And he'd be really probably a lot better defensively. This is a guy you might be able to get to come off your bench. I mean, he's from Oak Park, would probably want to come home. He said all the right things in his interview, like we said last week, that, you know, he wants to play, he wants a chance on a team that could really compete at a high level. So now how do they do all this? They have one open scholarship. To get three guys, they'd have to have two leave. I've said I thought the most likely to leave would be Alon Fabloy and Burke Bayuk Tunsil.
Nice. I think you did that well.
Thank you. Man, the announcers all year didn't come close, right?
Some of them got it good. I mean, Buchtengel is basically where we landed, and I think that's fine.
Okay. So between those two, and then if you're actually gonna, you know, take four, I mean, you need another one. So it would be someone from Will McClendon, Devin Williams, you know, Jan Vide, maybe even, you know, Sebastian Max sees, you know, another a wing and a guard. who knows how that shakes out, but this is coming. That we're gonna go get guys that we think we need to win. And, you know, we love the guys who are on the team, all great kids, but next year we need to win, especially after the season. So if they see the writing on the wall, they do.
Yeah. No, and I think that makes sense. And I guess the question right now is, when we were talking a couple of weeks ago, it was, who might be going to try to secure their own big bag of cash. And, you know, there was some speculation. Well, Sebastian Mack could be attractive. You know, he was the leading scorer on this year's UCLA team. Do we anticipate at this point anybody, leaving for highest bidder type situations?
Yeah, you know, you have to assume that every one of these guys is trying to get a bigger bag right now, no matter what, no matter who they are. Very few of them would say in all of college basketball, I had a modest season. I think I'm, I'm set.
I have enough bag.
Yeah, there's no way. No way. Even some who didn't have good seasons are thinking, oh, I still have this amazing upside. I need a little bit more. And thinking that other programs will be out there and offering them more NIL. And a lot of times that's true. Like you said, maybe Sebastian Mack will have someone who he's taught, you know, through intermediaries, he's talking to another program and they offer him, you know, a good amount of money, and UCLA's priorities can't match that in NIL.
Right.
You know, and that's what's funny too. I wrote on the forum that UCLA's NIL situation is looking not horrible, pretty good, let's say. And then someone responded, well, okay, so then if they, and they weren't being, you know, negative about this, but I just want to cut this off the thought process here. So all NIL will be good. So if they don't get someone, it won't be because of NIL. That's not the way this works. This is real world stuff. You don't just have a blank NIL check to write. If you, let's say there's a guy out there that you really like, a transfer, and you pegged him for this much, but he wants $150,000 more, let's say, they're not going to say, if that's the guy they've said, that's the guy that makes a difference for us next year, they're not going to deny that. They'll designate and earmark that $150,000 more to this guy. But that could take you away from someone else that you might also be recruiting. So you've got to make the decision, giving this one guy more, is that worth maybe that we can't get this other guy for this other slot, or we can't pay Sebastian Mack's demands? So just because the NIL is looking better, it doesn't mean that all NIL is taken care of. That's just not the way it works.
Yeah. This is the management piece that has now become, you know, roster management has always been a huge component of any coach. Now it is essentially this general managership that's, you know, you've got to assign value to certain things. And we might, you know, quibble about, well, where that value should be assigned, but assuming that, like, I don't know, they've got $15 million and can give everyone $1 million. That's just not, or 13 million. That's not the situation. And so it does require careful management of the funds, which are competitive. Like UCLA should be in the market for some big time transfers, some guys who other programs covet, but it's not going to be everybody. And that's just, and for basically everyone on the market, aside from maybe Duke, that's just the situation. So UCLA is in good position to be competitive, but not in, you know, oh, we can just buy whoever we want.
So let's just, this is where it gets kind of exciting just to speculate. So let's just say you return Dylan Andrews and Odembona.
Yeah.
We'll go straight through it. At shooting guard, you've got some mash. If you don't have Sebastian Mack, you've upgraded.
Right.
Then you have that small forward we're talking about and the power forward, starter level veteran guys. Let's just, as an example, let's not say it's him, but Kobe Johnson
type.
Right. And Michael Ajayi is your power forward, right?
Right.
Then you got Lazar Stefanovic.
First guy off the bench.
Right. And he's definitely rotating in there.
Yeah.
I mean, he's probably
25 minutes a game at the 3 and 4.
That's what I was going to say. Adai Mara is coming off the bench for Odembona. Brandon Williams, a year better coming off the bench for the power forward. Jan Vide, a year better. I'm really excited to see what he's going to look like if he stays in Westwood for the summer. Yeah. Eric Freeney, the freshman, right? Then from there, you've got, you know, maybe Devin Williams, who everyone on the board loves, sees the upside, right? If they get Bona or a transfer post and Adai Mara, Devin Williams is not playing that much of the post. And that, like we said before, they get a starter level power forward and Brandon Williams returns. I mean, Devin Williams probably isn't seeing much time at the four unless he can really compete with Brandon Williams, which, you know, he has more athleticism.
Yes.
So then you've got maybe Will McClendon, who's like your 12th or your 13th guy, something like that. Or you add like Clark Slatcher to that. If you really think about how that team might stack up, like I'm thinking about the guys who are just going to return to Arizona, right? Or the guys who are going to return to Gonzaga. I would take this UCLA team this way. Now, of course, we have to, you know, Arizona, when they're done and Gonzaga's done, they're going into the transfer portal deep. But I'd take this team.
What I would say is, so last year's team was second in defensive efficiency or adjusted defense on KenPom. That version of a team with junior Dylan Andrews, junior Odembona, call it Kobe Johnson, Michael Ajayi pulling down defensive rebounds, whoever at the two, I honestly don't really care. That might be close. Like they might once again be a top five defensive team like that. When you have a plus defender at the one, a plus defender at the five, and then a plus defender on the wing. In Mick Cronin's system, that's going to be a really, really, really good defensive team, especially with somebody who can actually clear the glass at the four.
Yeah. I mean, that's exciting to think about. You'd have a really good defense right there.
Yeah.
And then some really offensive scoring power too.
Offense is gauche. No,
it is gauche. As we saw by watching Virginia.
Hey, look, at least Mick Cronin isn't running a mover blocker, okay?
Yeah. Wow. I like Tony Bennett, so I don't want to.
No, they just have not recruited guys
who
really play at that level.
So, and this is the thing too. This is Mick Cronin's biggest calling card. To let's say someone like Kobe Johnson. Come to UCLA, I will take you down the Jaime Jaquez path.
Yeah.
I will turn you into a first round pick from where you are. I mean, Kobe Johnson probably isn't, he's an NBA player, I think, but not draftable right now. If you went back 2 years ago, that's kind of the same level where Jaime was, right? Borderline projected as an NBA draft pick.
Yeah.
So that's what Mick Cronin's and you know what? And that's not just BS. Stay another year, come play for me, and I will turn you into Jaime Jaquez. And I mean, Kobe Johnson, that would have to resonate with him. About the same height, right? Probably a better defender. Just develop his game along the lines of Jaime Jaquez.
I mean, I think so. I think Jaime just, and even if they're not analogous, like even if a player isn't analogous to Jaime, I think that pitch and what was able to be accomplished with Jaime, and not just Jaime, Jalen Clark. I mean, even the fact that Tiger Campbell is still making money playing basketball is, I mean, given his physical limitations, I think there's a lot of, for guys who have been around a while, and this is why, like, if Brandon Angel ends up being the guy, I think there's pitches you can make to the older guys where you can say, look, you know you're a developmental guy. Like, you understand, you've been through it, you know how you've improved from freshman to sophomore to junior. I can get you over the hump because look what I've done with these guys. Look what I did with Jules Bernard, who's suddenly scoring points in the NBA as a 24-year-old. Like, look at all of these guys and look what I've done with them. And I think he's got a compelling pitch, specifically in the transfer portal, that maybe even goes beyond, because high school kids can be very unrealistic about who they are, what their level is, and all that kind of stuff. And that's not to say that transfers aren't either. They are. But they're a little bit more tied to reality because they've been through a college program a little bit longer. So I would think that would resonate with Kobe, just to say, you know, I've developed guys like you into guys who can play in the pros. So come and over, resonant, and we're going to do that.
And Michael Ajayi.
Ajayi. Yeah.
Hey, Michael, look at Jaime Jaquez. You're about the same height. Kind of, I mean, has that inside-outside game kind of thing. Better shooter than Jaime. Not as good as of an athlete, but it's a great pitch. Heck, it's a great pitch for a Dembona.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, here are your two possibilities, a Dembona or Amari Bailey.
Yeah. Two roads diverged.
You know, I want to, you know, when we're talking, like, we brought up what Jay Wright said, and you know, Jay Wright's a very smart guy. He not only nailed what's happening in college basketball, he also laid an excuse for his fellow coach of Calipari, which all coaches do, right? Coaches, it's one big brotherhood, and they're all out there defending each other. Yep. But he was right. And in this, more people are staying in college basketball because of NILs. I mean, a lot of teams have just a bunch of old looking dudes, man. I mean, yeah. Some of the teams I'm looking at, I'm going, wow, that team, they all look 27. You can't throw 18-year-olds out there and compete, no matter how talented the 18-year-olds are. And he was talking about Kentucky, but I think, you know, we need to acknowledge that was a mistake that Mick Cronin made last year. It wasn't, and everyone keeps talking about which Euros he recruited and brought in, and that is a little bit of an element, but most of it was he thought he'd be able to bring in seven freshmen and compete. And he learned pretty quickly as soon as they started playing. He's all, wow. You could, you know, in his post-game interviews, that was the mistake last year. Looking back, hindsight, I know 2020, but instead of going for seven freshmen, he should have. A lot of other programs, and let's give, like, you know, Tommy Lloyd credit. I'm going to go out and plug in all of these holes with transfers. Instead of Mick's impulse to do it is, I'm a developmental guy. And he still had one foot in that old school kind of developmental idea. And that was a mistake. He should have, not only Lazar Stefanovic, he should have made it a priority to bring in among eight new guys, at least two more.
Yeah.
Right. Cam Spencer, which he could have had.
Yeah. That if we're talking about missteps, because I don't think Cam Spencer makes this UConn, but Cam Spencer makes this an obvious tournament team.
Yeah, exactly. So, that was a mistake. Specifically, it wasn't the guys, it was the group of seven freshmen.
Yeah.
Now going forward, I think he clearly recognizes that he made a mistake. And that's why he's jumping into the transfer portal. And going forward, that's what you're going to have to do, because you can't compete with a team full of developmental guys. Even if they're really, really talented, you just can't. It's over. So I mean, look at some of the teams. Look at, if you look at Arizona, how Tommy Lloyd put that team together. That's pretty phenomenal. It truly is. I mean, from Caleb Love. I mean, how many transfers did they get? Right.
Well, Caleb Love, Keyshawn Johnson, are the two huge ones. And then you add that to Ballo, who's deep into his. I mean, I think I my answer to this is I think it's still a mix of things. Like, I think you're still looking for a mix, because for Mick, it's always going to be a huge component is going to be culture. And as we said at the beginning of the season, there's a developmental curve no matter who the new guy is. Lazar Stefanovic of the end of the year was not the Lazar Stefanovic we saw at the beginning of the year. There's always going to be a developmental curve playing for Mick Cronin. And I think his complexion of what a successful team is going to look different, but it can't include bringing in 7 or 8 new freshmen every single cycle.
Like, well, you'll have to bring in more guys. Before, it used to be 2 to 4 every year of freshmen recruits, right? It's going to be more. You're going to have more turnover. It's going to be 3 to 5 to 6 guys on average per year. You got to bring in, if you're bringing in 5 guys, you got to bring in at least 2 or 3 transfers. You just have to. If you bring in 5 freshmen, it just ain't going to work.
Yeah, I mean, whatever. I think going forward, however many spots you think you have to fill, it's half of those need to be transfers. I think that's probably the good rule of thumb going forward for Mick Cronin and UCLA.
Yeah, and before it was,
try to get as many freshmen who are talented as you can. But
see, and what it was, in my opinion, in analyzing Mick believes and knows that he was a developmental guy. His success was developing, bringing in players and developing them. He probably overestimated just how good he'd be able to develop these guys in their first year. But there's also, there's an old stigma to transfers, that,
what was wrong at your previous place?
Why did you leave your team? I mean, why did you decide? And guys who have left to 2 places, right? Yeah. Like, a lot of times you wouldn't even touch those guys. Now, yeah, they'll touch those guys because it's
Don't
a different, it's a different era, right? So what had the stigma before about transfers doesn't exist anymore. And Cronin was always going after quality players that he knew would be able to be tough and had the kind of mental acuity and toughness that he needed. And a lot of times those weren't transfers previously, but now they are.
Yeah.
Of course, there's still some guys out there who are transfers that you don't want, right? That are just vagabonds. But
well, and there's an art to it. Like, some of these teams that are transfer built end up being less than the collection of their parts. I mean, look across town at USC. A lot of transfers, not very good. So I think it still comes down to the delicate chemistry of constructing a roster. But you need to have more older guys. Like, that's just the reality of college basketball now. Teams that are good are going to stay old because they're going to continue to get transfers. And if you're not playing that game, you're putting yourself on a 4-year cycle that may never come to fruition because guys will leave. Now, I think UCLA, if we're talking about NIL, circling back, UCLA is going to have the NIL. If they want to be that kind of program, like, if Mick decides after this cycle, like, oh, God, I hate bringing in transfers. They really don't get it until halfway through the year. And he decides he wants to be a 4-year developmental program. They'll have the NIL resources probably to retain their roster. But you are diminishing the upside of UCLA as a brand if you're doing that. Like, this is not a program that should be, oh, every 3 or 4 years we're pretty good again. It should be, there's an off year every now and then, but for the most part, you should be really good every single year.
Along those same lines, too, I just want to say, people are asking on the forum, why has there been no UCLA player that's put his name in the portal? Generally, players like to be at UCLA. Yeah. It would take a lot for them to say they're leaving. I don't like it here.
A consistent thing about Mick Cronin is, yes, a screamer, and I don't think it's ideal. My own personal preference would be not. but the guys don't, they don't hate him. It's not like the Ben Howland thing where guys couldn't wait to get away from him. It's not like that. Whatever your personal preference is about watching it during games and all that kind of stuff, it just does not lead to the problems in the program that you would like, that you're thinking. It just doesn't.
Yeah.
So I think that's just the reality of it. Guys have not been like, you know, running away from him. It's been, you know, Amari Bailey left after a year because, you know, in retrospect, that was his plan. But there's a very good chance that Dem Bonus sticks around.
And there are a lot of players on the team. I'll just say, like, Berke, you're living in Los Angeles. You're making a decent amount of NIL money. Going back to Turkey. I mean, the lifestyle you would be giving up. He is a 19-year-old living in Los Angeles as a UCLA basketball player. I'm sure he likes it here. And to give that up, to go back to Turkey, even making a little bit more money, dang, that's a lot. So they all want to be here. Generally, if I'm generalizing, most of the players at UCLA want to be at UCLA. So if you're going to get them to leave, they're going to have to see the writing on the wall that Mick's trying to upgrade the roster.
Yeah. All right. So while we've been recording, another 1600 bucks has come in. So it's now, the count is at, as of 9:58 a.m., $91,544.95.
That's amazing. And Greg Hicks gave.
Greg Hicks gave twice.
Yeah. Right. And he makes a really good point too. You used to just languish in ineffectiveness of just watching UCLA basketball. What could you really do to make them better? You could go on the Bro forum and complain. You could tell, if you gave to the Wooden Fund, you would say, I'm po-, but you know, doesn't really have, this is the most direct way you have ever been able to impact a UCLA sport.
This is, they're calling it the Hicks effect, because as of 4:21 p.m., it was 77,379. In, you know, a little over, you know, whatever, 15 hours, it's gone up $14,000.
Maybe Greg should take a job with Men of Westwood.
Maybe he should just be a sailor, just sailing. Yeah, look at that. Sails. Sails, baby. All right. Well, that's it for us. This was your second podcast of the week, because we missed last week because I was indisposed. We'll be back again next week. Maybe there'll be some actual things happening at that point. Maybe, obviously, there'll be a lot more names in the portal, so we'll probably talk a lot of basketball again. And we owe you a preview of UCLA's defense heading into spring ball. So stay tuned for that next week, and we will talk to you again next time.
See y'all.
On May 23rd.
I want to go back to normal.
What's normal?
The Paramount Plus original series, Evil Returns.
We've already hunted werewolves and demons.
And now what? A baby antichrist?
Okie dokie.
Prepare yourself.
You will not beat us.
For the end.
I have visions of hell.
Make it stop. Make it shut up.
You're not gonna survive this.
Evil, the final season. Streaming May 23rd. Only on Paramount Plus.